What can the natural world teach us about ourselves? And how can it help us overcome the trauma and pain that keep us from realizing our whole potential and being? Are our destinies written in the stars, forged by transpersonal influences? Or can we as humans exert the power of our free will in determining the course of our lives? This conversation with astrologer Dulcie Bell Bulley, recorded in April of 2020, took place as much of Western Colorado and the nation stood on the precipice of a year-long and continuing roller coaster of lockdowns, social distancing, death, and disorientation. How does where we were then compare with where we are now? And what can we glean from the natural cycles of the Earth and stars about what lies around the corner? In Season 4, Episode 1, Cosmic Voices, Voyager, astrologer, and healer Dulcie Bell Bulley sheds light on her practice as a gardener of the spirit and how a life lived outside the norm cultivated an appreciation for the resilience of the human condition in times of personal tragedy, war, and pandemic. Welcome to Season 4 of the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West. Crossing the Divide counters a media culture fixated on urbanism and elevates a region defined by open space, sweeping vistas, big skies, and natural wonder. I'm Gretchen Reist, guiding you over the divide and into the diverse terrain of the American West. You know, we've never met, but you're one of those people for me that your name kind of circulates around me. Because I know many people who've come to you. And I had a friend who came to you just within the last few months. And, you know, she said, oh, I went to see Dulcie. And it just kind of struck me that you're this name that comes up for me, has come up for me many times with people I feel like I've connected with here. And I thought, wow, that would just be so interesting to talk to somebody who does this kind of work. So maybe we kind of just start there. I really want to find out about your personal background because it's so off the what seems to be off the mainstream of what so many people's life experience is. So first of all, welcome to Crossing the Divide. I didn't welcome you. And I will tell people who are listening to this, we're in a bit of a different situation. It is April 3rd, and we are in the midst of, unfortunately, a pandemic. And I usually would record this at the library studio or on location, wherever. And today, we're doing this via Skype, so the sound's going to be a little bit different. It's new for me. I'm just going to go with the flow. I'm just going to go with the flow today. I don't have any expectations. It's just we're going to have a nice conversation and find out more about your life and your work. So, Dulcie Bell Bulley, I want to welcome you to the show. And first off, I think that I would love to have you translate for us what you do on your website, which is Astrology by Dulcie. And am I saying it properly, Dulcie? Okay.
Correct.
You are listed as transpersonal counselor, alchemical hypnotherapist, astrologer, and radical living coach. So in order for us to understand what all that means, I would love to go through those one by one and get a better sense of what that all is. So let's start with transpersonal counselor. I've never heard of that before.
Well, transpersonal psychology is the fourth arm of psychology, and its founding fathers are Stanislav Grof and some of the psychologists and psychiatrists who came before him, based on basic principles of psychotherapy: Carl Rogers, unconditional positive regard, Maslow hierarchy, you know, states of well-being. So this sort of fourth realm of psychology has its marriage with spirit. It's not just psychology. Psychology is like, okay, birth to death. That's the story. Transpersonal psychology is this, well, what was going on before birth and after death? And where does the land you're sitting on come into it, and the air that you breathe? And what about our place and our connection in the vaster scheme of things? So it's transpersonal, it's beyond the personal. And some of the voices in transpersonal psychology are ecologists. You know, they talk about our relationship with the planet. They're somatic therapists. They talk about our responses in the body. So, and then, of course, the conversation or the connection with spirit. You know, some of the folks we read, Ken Wilber, the spiral dynamic theory is very important to me. The way of seeing, and you're nodding, so you know it. So that's
I tried to read it. It was the book, right? It was the book. Yes, I didn't finish
the
theory
it. Of everything or something, right?
I loved it, but it was a level of. I think the older you get and the farther you get away from just the college experience and that deeper kind of thought, I understood what they were saying and I really appreciated it and loved it. I found the writing style a little difficult, but
it's academic.
I took something. Yeah, but I definitely took mm-hmm. quite a bit from even what I had read. So I'm there. Yes, definitely. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm delighted to hear that we share that language, and maybe some of our listeners will too. And I can just simply recommend the spiral dynamic map. That's all I use, really. And its original people are Beck and Graves, but you can Google it, and you've got this fabulous map of these memes or these layers of consciousness, and the idea is to transcend and include. And a lot of that came from my years at Naropa University in Boulder, which is a Buddhist university. I myself am a mystic Christian with Buddhist leanings, and, you know, throw in a bit of Tao, throw in a bit of shamanism, but spirit definitely. And that was on the heels of my bachelor's from Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado. And then, of course, I was educated prior to that in British schools in Africa.
So we'll move on to alchemical hypnotherapist. I love the word alchemy. I think it's actually on my business card. So this is this is very interesting to me. So what exactly is that?
Well, alchemy, as you know, since it's one of your things, is to take something really base and turn it into gold or something meaningful, something ordinary into something sublime. And it's also the suggestion of kind of turning something that's kind of heavy and not so great into something that's really light and good. And so after I got my master's from Naropa, I needed some more kind of practical application for my work with clients. And I was very drawn to hypnotherapy and to meditation and things like that. So an old friend of mine's, I was doing a technique I'd developed, and she came in for a session, and afterwards she said, you know what, that's just like alchemical hypnotherapy. And I said, really, tell me more. And it turned out that there was a program starting, how fortuitous, you know. And so she had done it once before, and she did it again. And so that was a year-long program, and that got me my certificate of hypnotherapy. And really, the premise comes from David Quigley out of California, who uses Jung, shamanism, basic, you know, hypnotherapy techniques, Milton Erickson, mesmer, all of those people, and he just puts them into this conglomerate in which you can, through active imagination, what a principle, to take active imagination and create this inner journey in which something really painful or miserable or misunderstood or lost or regretted or angry or something, and through this imaginative journey in the inner realm, come out with an outcome that the person can live with. So instead of that terrible episode, you know, when I got beaten or raped or stolen from or whatever it was, and that I get a certain trigger in the outside world and I regress, I go into a state of unconscious behaviors. So instead of that, now I can go, I can kind of work with that trauma. It's like going into the garden, and in the garden is this thing that just hasn't been growing. It's this bindweed or something that you just don't like. And you just get in there with your gloves, but you do it with tenderness and love. And you feel the mulch of it and you pull those things out. And you do it very quickly and gently because you don't want to hurt the garden bed. You know, you want to keep everything as healthy as can be and in a very loving, tender, but quick, like a surgeon sort of way. Whatever the person needs, the person may need to go on that journey just a little bit longer. But it's always important, funnily enough, in alchemical hypnotherapy to have safe distancing, which is kind of what we're experiencing now. So in alchemical hypnotherapy, the client, deep in hypnosis, they're taken to this trauma, something that they want to change. Sometimes they don't even know what it is, and little pieces are coming up. And so it's very important right there to say, you know, to get to the client and say, okay, now we're going to watch that from a long distance away. See how safe you are? See, you can see that as much as you need to. And so that's, and then you can start making changes. So that instead of something terrible happening, you now have this gold coming in. You're making this change, and you're putting in a positive state, and you're anchoring it. You're breathing it. Oh, smell the flowers. What a beautiful day. Oh, look at that. All that is just such a dream in the distance. And now when you hear the certain stimuli, you instead feel so relieved and relaxed. So
the interesting thing about the hypnosis or the hypnotherapy, reading, and this is a little off topic, but something that interests me in reading about how memory works within the brain, when you're going under hypnosis, how do you as a practitioner avoid that idea where you can create memory, let's say, for somebody?
First of all, let me correct you right there. I need nothing from the client. Nothing. The client, the person there, that I make a discernment whether or not I'm going to work with or not, first of all. That's my first thing, my intuition, the willingness of the person to be in their work and to be responsible for their inner work. I'm a guide. I'm a guide of the inner realms. And that is, it's the person's journey. And I meet them with deep respect there. And I really, really trust the psychology of the person, the psyche of the person. The brain is very plastic. So that's why this work of change, of inner change, is to develop within the person their inner resources, most primarily, their ability to self-soothe and to heal the pain within.
Do you have to, when you're, I don't know if you would call it screening or a potential client, is that something you consider where you try and feel out whether or not this person is ready to go there?
Well, yes, you know, there are clients who come in and they're desperate. They are so ready. They're so primed. They are so, they know they want to move something. They cannot articulate it sometimes. They're weeping. They're in great distress. They need to move it that day, that hour, that minute. And sometimes they have obsessive thinking, and the obsessive thinking is really defense mechanism to stop this huge emotion that wants release, because it's just the natural kind of psyche's ability to sort of say, hey, keep this under wraps. Oh, look, think about that. 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 And you go, so they come in and they're very ready. And I just sit with them while they let it go. I don't even hypnotize them. I just sit with them. I say, can I hold your hand? Or sometimes, you know, can I rub your foot? Get their verbal permission. And we just sit there till it's done. Sometimes we have to go out into nature, which is right outside the door. And we have to find something out there. We have to find something that represents this pain. This pain that I just don't even know what it is. It's just is pain for the world, for the species, for the virus, for my mother, for my child, whatever it is they have, for my lost marriage, for the money that he still has, whatever it is. They just go out there to nature, and there it is right outside. And they just take it, and we just sit down again, and we just breathe, and then it just comes.
Are you amazed by the ability of the human brain to throw up walls to certain things as a coping mechanism just to get through day-to-day life? I interviewed someone a couple of years ago who had dissociative identity disorder. And I think some people might look at that and say, that's crazy. Those people are crazy. And to me, I just felt that it's this amazing ability of the brain to shut down or open up different parts in order to just, it's a survival mechanism. I think it's miraculous.
I totally agree. Absolutely agree. I've been through periods of trauma in my life that if I had not disassociated, you know, the part of me would not have been, you know, it's just like nature, right? You go out in nature, the tree's not doing so great. You cut off a few limbs so that the core can live. Why do we think our psyches are so different? We're just godness of the spirit, you know, and the brain does what it has to do. But of course, you can get to the place where it's so deep and so fragmented. It's just so painful. And it just, you know, and I don't work at that level. Well, maybe I do. There are people who will say, I worked with Dulce and this, I thought I was so broken. So I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, I'm not a psychiatrist. Okay, that's what a psychiatrist does. And they prescribe medications because they know that the brain needs a bit more this, a bit more that, you know, let those neurotransmitters linger a little bit in the synaptic gap, take this, take serotonin, whatever it is. I don't do that. I have a master's degree. That's it. Thank God. I don't want any more, but I keep learning. I keep learning. I'm learning all the time. Right now, I'm reading Immunity to Change by Lisa Leahy and David Hawkins, Letting Go. But anyway.
So it's a journey for you as a practitioner as well.
Oh, it's the whole process, Gretchen, is completely organic. It's completely what the person brings, where they're at. It's, you know, it's a wonderful privilege to work with people on that level. It's such an intimate thing. And that's what happens. You know, intimacy is one of my values, you know, because we need each other in our healing process. So much of my life I've been alone, doing stuff alone. And it's just, you know, because it was tough that way. And I was kind of proud of it, you know. Get out, I got to throw my arrow, you know. And I just come to realize, you know, my husband, who I was with, you know, for 18 years together, he passed away after a 9-month struggle with colon cancer. And this is the anniversary of his death this time of year. So this is the first anniversary. So just being aware of, you know, oneself as humanity, Like they say in Zululand, you know, Ubuntu, you know, humanity, our connection with one another. And that's what this whole virus thing is about, you know, this prickly fruit of a virus making us into one body.
Yeah, I saw a headline the other day, one of the many articles being written right now, but it talked about how humans are built to work together. And it feels like the opposite direction that we've been going for so many years now, that I think when this first happened, that myself and I think a lot of other people have been wondering is, do we have the tools anymore to be able to get through this together?
Yeah, it's good to hear you talk about that, because it's a shared experience that we all feel so alone. And that here we are, you know, it used to be all about the selfie, right? Oh, the selfie, the selfie. Now I can't wait to get on Skype or Zoom or FaceTime and see beautiful faces, you know? It's wonderful. So I think you're right. I think it's a different level of humanity with technology. And this is what's coming up, you know, at the end of this year, we have this incredible shifting. We have a shifting of the age that's coming up, astrologically speaking. And it does speak to exactly what you were addressing, the tribe, the connection.
Mm. And that brings me to astrology. Astrology is one of those things, I read my horoscope, but I don't have a full understanding of exactly what it is or how it works. So if you were to define it, how do you define it? How do you define astrology?
Astrology is the observation of events over time, both celestially and socially and climatically and geographically. So it's the observation of world history, what's going on with the players, the people and the countries and the blah, 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 what's going on with the weather and the diseases and the political moves and so on and so forth. Oh, and what happens to be going on celestially as well at that time? What's going on? Now, we know correlation is not causation. This is where people get wrong. They go, oh, you're so dumb because you think astrology causes something. No, actually, no. it's the correlation. We're looking for the correlation. So because astrology is just a map. It's just a map, as above, so below. So, you know, you look at the map and you can go, well, historically, these connections have been associated with da 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 da. And the last time this occurred was da 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 da. And the person goes, well, that was. And then the person says, well, that was or that wasn't. And so basically, it's just reading of the person's map, using these symbols, and these symbols are coming from the movements of the planets over time. So it's a deeply symbolic language. It's, you know, there's a lot of geometry to it, where what planet is in, you know, connection with the other. It's almost holographic, really, because you're dealing with time and space. I work with three wheels, the natal chart, the progress chart. Actually, I work with four wheels, the natal chart, progress chart, solar arc directed chart, and transits. So it's a complex map. Let's put it that way. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's interesting to hear that it's not about causality so much, that this causes this other thing. And I also didn't I also didn't understand that you're also looking at history in that way, that it's not just what's going on above, but it's also looking at what's going on here.
Well, did you read my column, my last column? That's exactly what I wrote about. I wrote about 2020 with reference to World War I, World War II, to the Black Plague, to 9/11. Those were all historical references based on the planets in the same position they are today. In the same relationships, not the same positions, but in relationship with one another.
So can you describe for us where we are right now and how that relates to, because I heard you on KAFM the other day. You were on, and that's exactly what you were talking about. And that was one thing that I did want to bring up in my conversation with you, was how where we are right now relates to all these other somewhat dark periods in history. So can you touch upon that a little bit more?
Well, they are primarily these two planets with very different orbits. Pluto, which has around 250 years to go around the sun, and has an odd ellipse too. It's kind of an elongated ellipse. And Saturn, which has a 30-year orbit around the sun, they get together every now and then, as they are wont to do by being in the same part of the sky. And they are together now. They were together in World War I when, the men were in the trenches. Talk about confinement. Talk about hardship, fear, a terrible, terrible time in human history. And COVID-19 affects the lungs. And that's, of course, what mustard gas and everything was, World War I. You can see the similarities. You know, we had references from leadership saying that this is a war against this virus. Then, of course, the two were conjunct together in Cancer at that time. And then World War II, they were square one another, so they were 90 degrees apart as opposed to being conjunct. And that was the beginning of World War II. And then in 9/11, they were exactly opposite one another, right across the major axis in the United States chart. And it so happens that in 2020, they're conjunct and we have a pandemic. So they're not causing it, but they're showing up and saying, what's happening on the earth? We can see what's happening in the sky. And of course, the movement of our entire solar system is dependent on each of these planets and their mass and their, exerting gravity. And I mean, you take one planet out of the mix and the whole solar system's going to go, tumbling, God knows, we'll roll around like a bunch of marbles. So, talk about society and the collective. And this is, of course, very transpersonal. It's bigger than you and me. It's the whole gang. All the way out there. It's way out there, man.
So knowing what you know, and it's not a prediction, but you can look at how things are going to be aligned and maybe make a general idea of how things might go, let's say, in a given year. How does that affect you in your own life? I mean, were you sitting around on New Year's Eve understanding where we were going to be and thinking, I'm a little bit concerned about what this year is going to bring?
I've been looking at this. Other astrologers throughout the world, my colleagues, my old teachers, my friends, we've been looking at this for a long, long time. So on New Year's Eve, I was grieving my husband. I wasn't even looking at the stars because I'd been looking at this for years. And I didn't schedule any classes. I stopped seeing clients because I knew it was impossible. Not that I consciously, it was already done. See, this is the problem with being an astrologer. You see things in the future and then you kind of, well, this is probably what happens to me. I just kind of live with what it is, and I think this is what you were saying earlier about hypnosis, is about being very, very careful not to plant ideas, not to cast the future, it's very, very important to me. And I know to other ethical professionals that we don't want to say, oh, this is the path to follow. And if it's very important to let people have their free will. People do have their free will and their own minds. And yet also we are part of something bigger than ourselves. And they do cast a light and they do cast a way. And so I find it to be very, very useful.
also in that interview, and I might not have heard correctly because I had various things going on at the time. It sounded to me as if astrology was something that you maybe came to a little bit later or got into it a little bit later, but it seemed like it was something that you maybe walk away from for periods of time, but then you were talking about being pulled back into it. It's something you maybe put away or walk away from a little bit, but then you're always drawn back. Can you talk about that a little bit, why that is?
When I was 12, one of my relatives gave me Linda Goodman's sun sign books, and that was, she was the first astrologer to take astrology to the mainstream. So I devoured it. And but I had other talents. That one of them was a very deep and powerful intuition and knowing. So when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I read palms. I never charged any money for it, but I could just look in a palm and see what was going on. And I remember there were lines of people lined up to see the girl who could read your palm. But when I started traveling, I traveled pretty extensively with just my backpack. I didn't do any of that. I put that behind me. And when I came to the Grand Valley in the late 90s, I hooked up with Crystal Bookstore. And of course, the folks here in the Grand Valley know Jim and Cheryl Lucas, and Jim was a great astrology teacher. He had a great wit and a sense of humor. He was just a wonderful, wonderful man. And so that's where I really got some grounding in astrology. And then when I learned the symbols, because it's an encoded language, the symbols are there so that you can have a whole volume in one tiny little symbol. So I took to that like a duck to water. I understood those symbols. I know other people in the class would have to look again and again, you know, what is this little symbol with the round ball and the stick and the little ears? And I'd know immediately who it was. And I think I had a remembrance of studying astrology from another time. And then, of course, I devoured everything that I could get on astrology, and I went to all sorts of classes, Alan Oaken, Stephen Forrest. You know, just looking at myself, looking at humanity, society from the blue meme and spiral dynamics, which is the realm of archetypes, I see I have two primary archetypes that are intrinsically who I am. These are just two I'm going to mention. And one is the healer, and the other is the astrologer. And there's also a part of me that I'm sure that doesn't want anything to do with either of those. They would just like to, you know, have a very kind of lazy life, I suppose. Because my healer and the astrologer are how I make a living. So, you know, but this is what a friend of mine put this on a little card for me, my friend Lydia. And it's a poem by Diane Ackerman, and there are four lines from this that really speak to a personal philosophy for me. And this is what calls me back to astrology. And the times when I shut the door on astrology is that's when I'm having my personal life, you know? But when I'm in the world, in my work, when I'm not in retreat, when I'm not, when I'm just being an ordinary, you know, Yahoo, which I really enjoy. this is what I'm called to. I swear I will not dishonor my soul with hatred, but offer myself humbly as the guardian of nature, as the healer of misery, as a messenger of wonder, and as an architect of peace. That's why I get called back. I've got work to do. And so have you, Gretchen. And that's what you're doing right now.
Radical Living Coach. I want to know what that means.
Well, that's the work I did. Thanks to my friend Lee, she turned me on to Colin Tipping and radical forgiveness. And radical forgiveness could also be called radical responsibility, which is where we just take responsibility for our creations. You know, you go through this labor of birth every time you do your podcast. You go through all these questions and all the self-doubt, but you give birth anyway. You do the podcast anyway, you know. It's like that little flower, that little bud on the tree. Oh, what's the point? I'm just going to be another damn leaf. Look at all the leaves. You know, what to what end? I'm going to fall in the fall. You know, oh, I'll just go ahead and do it anyway. Which is why I love spring, you know. But that's what Colin Tipping is, just this whole sense of just, it's all this reflection. And so, radical living is this notion of really releasing these emotional blocks so that we can just be conduits for love. And it sounds kind of, you know, kind of highfalutin or something, but really what it's a lot of hard work sometimes, but it's also, it takes tremendous courage, but it's also a lot of fun because it provides a philosophy for me to live by. Oh, look what I created. Okay, you know, I'm okay with it. These are my feelings about it, and I'm okay with my feelings. You know, this stuff that happened, this thing that's really hurt me or hurt other people and helped me see a shadow in myself. Oh my God, I saw my own shadow. Holy cow, this person pointed it out to me. Well, you know what? You don't have to point it out to me. Thanks. You don't have to point it out to me anymore. Thanks so much, because I'm going to take this little shadow and I'm going to love it for myself. I'm going to take responsibility for my own shadow that's been out there running amok. And you know what? I'm going to choose peace. I'm going to choose peace. And so I love that four step over and over. But it's like that Ho'oponopono prayer from Hawaii, you know. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you.
So I wanted to go back to the beginning. You were born in Africa, not a background that we would consider mainstream. So tell me about your life.
Oh, my God. No, that's too much. It's too long. Yeah, I'm very, very old. I look quite young, but I'm actually very, very old. No, I don't know how to answer that question. I was born to a 19-year-old woman who was one of seven children who came with her family from England to be a farmer. And he came over from England because he was going to teach the farmers how to grow tobacco. And my father was a man who was 12 years older than her, and he was a policeman who spoke many languages, and he rode a horse throughout what was then southern Rhodesia, which was the last little spurt of English colonization. So I'm the last spurt of the English Empire. Well, not me personally. There's quite a number of us. And that's, you know, that is what it is. Yep, I was there in pretty much lived out in the bush, climbed trees, stayed out all day playing in the dirt. It was both heaven and hell because there was a civil war while I was growing up. So that's a very hard time in my life. And then I went down from there on the train to University of Natal in South Africa. But I was so traumatized, I couldn't study. So I entered, I worked in banking. And then my friend, she was also from Zim. By then it was Zimbabwe. She was also from Zim. And she and I started traveling together. But before that, I traveled on my own anyway. I went to family in Aussie. I hitchhiked through quite a bit of Australia. I worked on a sheep farm. I hitchhiked a lot, actually, even in South Africa during the war, which was not smart, but what did I know? And then I worked in England for a while as a barmaid. And so I just worked my way around, but, you know, I had a backpack. Came to the States, didn't really want to come to the States, but my girlfriend wanted to. So now she went on to Australia, and she's married with a baby who's my godchild, who's getting married this year. And so I just ended up staying in the USA. So that's my pre-USA life. And then I have my USA life, and I am the end result of my USA life. And that's a whole different chapter, but it involves my time as a social worker. I was a social worker for a long time, and then, you know, met my husband Dale in the tail end of 2001, and we were together until he passed last year, April 19th, 2019, at a full moon in Libra on Good Friday. And so here I am now at the kind of the, oh, during that time that Dale and I were together, he taught me a lot about running rivers and music. He was a wonderful musician. I always got very used to having music in the house and music festivals, running rivers. You get the picture, the Colorado lifestyle, you know. How lucky are we? How lucky are we? Oh, bless Colorado. And so now I'm at a new place. I'm at a birth. I've been through a death. And again, I mean, God, if I keep dying and being born like this, hell's teeth, I'm getting worn out. But I'm not. I cancel that. But here I am. You caught me in a vulnerable time because I am at a time of birth for myself, going through this with this nation that I have. That I've adopted I'm a citizen and I vote. I'm an advocate for wilderness, for rivers, for water, for fresh air, for animals. And I'm so grateful for the oil and the gas we can put in our vehicles that keep our homes warm. And I just look for new technology to make the things that we use and depend on to make them more user-friendly, because I'm very concerned about climate change. I've done the math. I've listened to the experts. I've seen what they have to say. And we are emitting way too much carbon. And our natural biosphere cannot cope. And if you take a look astrologically, if you look at human design, you know, anything human design teaches us is that we're very susceptible to programming. And that's the new age we're moving into, or we've already been aware of, where we're programmed to be consumers, to be idiots, you name it. Anyway, forgive me, I'm rambling on. There were so many thoughts from earlier.
It's a big life. It's a very big life. I'm sure it's hard to... Mm-hmm. Wrap that into a nice package. You've had so many life experiences that I think a lot of people go through life never being able to have, visiting so many different places and being exposed to so many different kinds of ideas. Does it make it easier for you to relate to other people, or does it sometimes make it harder in some way? I just have found that, you know, we all connect on certain levels, but beyond a certain point, sometimes it gets hard to connect if our life experience has been so different from those people around us. I'm fascinated by the human experience. One person will be born and die, and their life experience will be completely different from mine. And they might live 100 miles away. It's something that just absolutely fascinates me, that we're all human, we all occupy the earth, but our experience can be so different. So how is that for you?
Well, I recognize there's a world in every head. I recognize there's a whole world behind sunglasses. That's what I know. That's what I know. I know we've created, a universal projection called the world as it is. and there's stuff that we share with that. And I also know that there's a whole world in that person's head. And that's what fascinates you, because there's a story there. And sometimes it's kind of a cautionary note, like, you know, I really want to get to know that person and see who they are and how they've created themselves and their life experience and how they go through struggles and hardships and their, you know, how they overcome and, you know, wow, you know, look at that person. There's so much heart energy, so much love for that person. And then there's other people you go, man, I don't know what's in your head, bro. But I don't want to know, you know. So I think that's where personal discernment comes in. You know, that's why I think that's why we'll have friends with people who that we can, we'll have that intimacy with that trust with, that we can be ourselves with and take that that love in that friendship, in that business world, in that common respect we have for one another, that way that allows each of us to grow. And, you know, I had, my head was very rigid. I had a very, very rigid head. I had I came from a white culture in Africa, you can imagine. But I had experienced great emotional and spiritual pain over apartheid and what it meant. I couldn't put it, you know, it made absolutely no sense with what I understood at a deep level. And so that was my first introduction to the rigidity of the mind. But I'm still learning so much. You know, if I find myself up against something, you know, that's not, you have to be aware, am I sort of throwing out stuff there because I want to get a certain response back? Am I willing to see what other people say about the world and their ideas? I'm getting more to that place where, you know, sometimes I could not be bothered to see what's in the other person's head because I'm, you know, I'm worn out, I'm not well, I'm hungry, I need to rest, I've got other things to do that are much more fun and creative. But there are other times I do need to know what's in that other person's head. I do, you know, I want to find common ground with that person who seems so different from me so that we can create a heart connection. Because if it's all in the head, well, we're going to argue. But if it's in the heart, that's always there. That's always there. So that's most important to me. When I came across my spiritual teacher in the late 90s, after I moved to the Grand Valley, and I began to learn, I began to see and discover the spiritual nature of the human experience. That was something that opened me up to just a whole different dimension, and it softened my life, and it helped me with a lot of the trauma that I had experienced. You know, I'd been a young woman on the road by myself and with a backpack. You know, that's pretty hard living. And I had thrown sheep over my shoulder in Australia and worked in pubs and been a nanny and worked, you know, in an animal place as a snake reserve. So I'd done a lot of things that were they were really living, I suppose, but I had never developed this spiritual life. And I'd always, always, always been a writer. I still have a journal from when I was like 6 or something. And I had a lot of drawings in my journals. And I still to this day am a visual artist as well as a written one. But so when I began to really seriously craft longer pieces of work, like I have written 7 books at this point in time, I found that my spiritual growth and my spiritual understanding was starting to inform my creative life, that it was starting to permeate my stories. And I have completed a book. It's a volume one of the Journey series. It's heart. Second is body. Then comes mind and soul. And I've already developed the entire series. But heart is the first one and it's ready to go. So it's these ordinary stories that are infused with the perennial messages. So there's love, loss, sexuality, homelessness, home, sanctuary, loss of wilderness, the creation of wilderness bridges, preservation of wilderness. And so these are all themes for our time. Some of them are themes that are eternal themes that I've put into these very readable, fast-paced, emotive novels. So I'm really grateful that my spiritual growth has come through into myself as an artist.
You mentioned that in the next year, we're going to be moving into a new phase. If people were to come to you because of where we are right now and maybe be having a hard time digesting what's going on in the world right now, what would you say to them about what this period means and then looking forward to what the next age is going to bring?
Well, always take it with a pinch of salt, always, because you are the creator. Yes, there are transpersonal forces at work, i.e. a pandemic. We just have some facts to deal with, right? So I'd say, chin up, come on, chin up, have a nice cup of tea, you know, breathe deeply. I mean, breathe as deep, deep, deep as you can, as often as you can, just. And for me, I make, if when I remember, and I do quite often, thank you, beloveds, I pray. I mean, I make my life a ceaseless prayer. But I'd say chin up, have a lovely cup of tea, deep breathing, pray, tend to your garden, get outside, tend to your garden, get in touch with the very simplest of things. This is just like World War One, those men in the trenches. It's just like World War II. It's just like 9/11. It's just like even way back in 1345 with the advent of the Black Death, the plague. And we didn't know what the heck we were doing then. We were sneezing all over the place, you know. Goodness knows. We never washed hands. Can you imagine? No wonder it spread like that. So, you know, so we are at, there is a big shift coming, and it's called the Great Mutation, which is when these two planets, Jupiter and Saturn, get together. They have this regular thing, but now they're going to connect in air signs for the first time in 600 years. So this is a 600-year cycle. Okay? It's done it before. It keeps doing it every 600 years, and those can be broken up into around 250 years or so per cycle. So you can see that there's cycles within cycles. And that's happening toward the end of this year, and it's going to take us into a new cycle, a new cycle that's simultaneously the beginning of a 600-year cycle and the beginning of a 200-year cycle. And then we have some very slow-moving planets like Pluto, Neptune, who are going to change signs in the next couple of years. And then we have what Human Design tells us about 2027. And then you add to that climate change, what we're doing with this runaway train. So we are at this end of an age where we've been before. And we're at the beginning of a new one. And this is where I find the principles of Buddhism so powerful, because we just use that. We use the end of something on the compost, don't we? We just throw it out there and we turn it over, and then pretty soon these little shoots come up. So out of the old, out of the pain, out of the grief, after the ending of something, aren't you happy that some of this stuff is ending? You know,
yes.
All this inane rushing around,
yes,
flying, doing this. I mean, you know,
yes. Oh, I do. Sure. Absolutely. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And that is that is the gift I feel, and probably why I felt more creatively inspired over the last couple of weeks, is because that is gone. And I that's another aspect of culture that I resist, because I'm more of a slow mover. I like to take my time. I don't like to do things quickly.
You're an oak tree, baby. And you know what? You got a lot of salmon going as well. And if we look at nature, it has all those things for us. That type of frenzy, that type of stuff, that belong perhaps to another time. Now, you know what? This COVID-19 thing is terrible. You know, I know a dear, dear person whom I love very much who had it and almost died. I mean, a very, very early case over in Australia. And it's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. And, you know, it's there's death involved in what we're experiencing now. There's loss, there's grief, and there's our shadow. And that's the compost heap. That, and those are our tears and our excrement, because that's Pluto is this time. But there's also this new life. It's happening at the same time. And, you know, our tears are watering the new life. And you just go at your own pace, because you know what? Your own pace is in tune. It's in tune with nature. You are much more organic than a gigabyte or some quick thing.
So you feel, I think it, to me, it sounds as if we'll go through this time and we'll learn what we need to from it, but there's always hope on the horizon.
Oh, absolutely. There's lots and lots of hope. And the hope is coming from what we're doing now. What we're doing now is we're slowed down. People are working with their kids at home. Yes, I'm sure they want to kill them. But, you know, we're dealing with stuff. You know, we're practicing good hygiene. Yes, there's hope. Of course there's hope. What I would invite our listeners, Gretchen, dear listener, what I would invite for you, if you like, is just to write a few words or meditate or think about a few words about, through the difficulty of this time and your fears of this time, what gold did you find? What pearl in your innermost self was exposed to you because of what's happening now? What did you find inside that you love and you want to keep and you can want to keep polishing and it's precious to you? That's the hope. That's what you found inside is what's going to take us forward. And that's my take on the future, is what each of us finds inside and what we bring forward. Lots of hope. It's going to be a different world in some ways.
Is there anything that else that you would like, that we haven't brought up in our conversation, that you would like listeners to take with them?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I'm really grateful for my teachers over the years, my students and clients, to my husband, to the rivers. I'm really grateful to centering prayer and the work of Father Thomas Keating. Every time, a person goes into centering prayer, divine therapy, you know, just the connection with the divine. I'm really grateful to radical forgiveness. Back when my head was as hard as a rock and I was going through another transition, I had a spiritual teacher in the form of a very ordinary woman here in the Grand Valley. Her name was Abby K. Marshner. And she became a spiritual teacher for me. She pulled me out of ignorance I was going through a life transition, kind of similar to the one I'm going to now. But I'd like to kind of leave our listeners with the thought that to return our gift, whatever it is, who we are, and whatever way that we love, and whatever thing that we can do, if it's to make somebody laugh, if it's to do good foot rubs, if it's to be ultra organized or pragmatic, if it's to be rational or logical, if it's to be conservative or wild or crazy or an adventurer, whatever that unique thing that is, that we just offer that as our gift to the collective. Because that's, and then the giving of the heart. That's, I think that just about covers it.
Thank you so much for talking with me, Dulcie. I think it was just fortuitous that this interview happened to come at this time, I think. And I hadn't thought of it that way before, but just now hearing what you're saying, and I think it feels like it was meant to happen at this particular time. I thank you for that. And good luck with your rebirth yet again.
Yes, don't plants do it all the time?
And we do it too. Hopefully our listeners will take to heart what you've told us and guided us to do to get us through a difficult time. Thank you.
That wraps up this edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for insider info and exclusive video and photography. Uncover a diverse array of Western voices by searching Crossing the Divide on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify, and now on Amazon Music and Audible. Support for Crossing the Divide comes from Rocky Mountain PBS, Mesa County Libraries, and the Daily Sentinel. Crossing the Divide, a voice for the Intermountain West.